We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Say Metro by T-Mobile, got the best deal in wireless, and it's all for you, all for me. Just switch quickly, cause Metro has two lines for $80 and two Samsung Galaxy J7 Star phones for free. Plus Amazon Prime included, that's the way wireless should be, only at Metro.
Plus sales tax and activation fee, $50 plus rate plan required. Not valid for numbers currently on T-Mobile network or on Metro in past 90 days. Offer subject to change. Offer valid for new Amazon Prime members. Amazon Prime has a $12.99 per month value. Restrictions apply. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the July 15th, 2019 edition of the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show covering the serious and mocking the ridiculous NFL news of the last week, brought to you by the FFPC. I am Hassan Rahim. My co-host Blair Andrews cannot be here today, but you can follow us at, you can follow me at HRR5010, and you can follow Blair at AmITheRealBlair. However, it's not just going to be me vamping into this mic for a while. Joining me today on the show today is Josh ADHD. Josh is the mastermind behind the RotoGrinders, Best Ball, and Scott Fishbowl apps, and he is an absolute legend among most of us sports data nerds. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh_ADHD. Josh, thank you so much for being here tonight. How's it going?
Things are good, Hassan. It's good to talk to you finally. I know we interact on Twitter quite a bit and a little bit on Slack and the RotoViz Slack. And it's good to actually get online and have a chat with you. It's a shame Blair can't make it tonight. He's going to miss out on all my goodness. Well, I guess that's not true, though. He's going to be editing this later tonight in the deep dark of the night. So he'll just have to catch up with us on the backside.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer, but we've been trying to get you on for a bit. And so I'm really, really excited you can be here. Just out of curiosity, how's I mentioned the Scott Fishbowl app a little bit earlier. How's that going for you? And, you know, the RotoGrinders best ball stuff. How's that going? How's your best ball season going?
Hey, I'll start with best ball. Best ball's going pretty well, especially now that PlayDraft has put out the mini best ball championship. That's the $5 series that they have. And I've been entering those probably once to twice a day as I have, you know, 30, 40 minutes to do a draft and kind of focus on that. So best ball season is going really well, especially now that the big tournaments have shown up. On the Scott Fishbowl side, I have drawn the slowest draft in all of Scott Fishbowl, all 100 leagues. We are the furthest behind out of everybody, but that's okay because it gives us some time to scout out the competition, the other leagues, and see what folks are doing from, you know, respective draft slots and whatnot. And, you know, I'm actually up for a pick right now, but I'm going to wait until after we're done recording because I really want to chew on this pick. And I feel like this is going to be kind of a pivotal pick for me and how I end up building the rest of my roster. So things are good. I'm happy to be here. Let's talk some football, dude.
Let's get into it. So for item number one, Coach Andy Reid has confirmed that the Chiefs want Damian Williams to be their full-time starter for the year. Matt, you know, we're pretty much in the height of like off-season stuff, but this is, this is the second time this off-season we've heard one of the Kansas City coaches just reaffirm that Williams is locked in as a starting running back this season. It's interesting to me that it's the head coach who's come out and given such a, you know, he's backed up the fact that Damian Williams is actually their guy. So do you think like Williams picks up where he left off last season? You know, do you expect Carlos Hyde to sort of eat in here? And what are your expectations for like Darwin Thompson at all?
You know, I think the truth about Damian Williams is that the Kansas City organization is telling us the truth. That they don't have a reason to lie. I mean, and the thing is, like, who are they going to switch to? Damian Williams is the guy. He was the guy all through late season and playoffs last year. They haven't acquired anybody that can take his job. So the only possibility I see that exists is if they acquire a player, you know, that's cut in training camp or maybe at the trade deadline that starts taking some of his work. And the only player that I see right now that's maybe feasible option here would be LeSean McCoy if Buffalo decides to part ways with him. Outside of that, I don't see any way that Damian Williams loses his job. And as we know, Andy Reid running backs are dynamite fantasy producers. So, you know, whether he loses a few carries a game, a few, you know, targets a game to Carlos Hyde or Darwin Thompson, I think it's academic. It doesn't matter. So Damian Williams full steam ahead, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. It's kind of rough to enjoy. I mean, as much as like a good running back as like Hyde kind of is, I just think that like he's on his third team in what, like a season and a half. The only way I really see him being truly fantasy relevant is sort of if Williams goes down. The one thing that I find kind of interesting here is that we seem to have forgotten just sort of how interesting a prospect Damian Williams sort of was. He was, even coming out of Oklahoma, he was a bit of a, you know, size speed specimen taken by Miami early, sort of wound up buried. I believe he, you know, had an injury that sort of prevented him from ascending as a running back, as a starter, and that's where Drake kind of took over. Williams is one of those guys that's interesting to me that he's sort of like, it's not necessarily he's bouncing around a little bit around the league. It's interesting that he's found a second life on the Chiefs. For a team that was rostering after they let Hunt go, they tried rolling out Spencer Ware as their RB1, and they like reversed course like almost immediately on that. They were like, no, this isn't going to go. And for a team that's like, you know, very cap constrained, they decided to actually pay Damian Williams as opposed to go dumpster diving in the free agent pool or taking one of the early running back prospects in this class. I mean, from a dynasty perspective, sure, maybe are you at risk of Williams losing his job next year? Sure, but worry about it when next year comes. I think just to ask, do you have any Damian Williams in dynasty leagues, or is that not something you'd consider?
Unfortunately, the dynasty ship has sailed on all of my Damian Williams shares. I cut bait with him while he was still with Miami, thinking, you know, he's just going to languish in this crappy spot for the rest of his career and end up being cut and bounce around and never find a home. And, you know, what you want to happen for so many of those fringe running backs on your dynasty rosters actually happened this one time. And it's like the perfect storm for Damian Williams. And you mentioned all the right traits. He's a size speed specimen. He played in this dynamite offense at Oklahoma, and he just went to the wrong damn team in the NFL at first. And then he found the perfect home with Andy Reid, who wants to feed him the rock. And if you were patient and held on to him, or, you know, happened to go pick him up off waivers halfway through the season last year, just thinking, oh, what the hell, you know, what happens if, you know, Kenyon Drake gets hurt or something like that, then you're making out. And, you know, good for you. But I think a lot of people probably in the same boat as me, and they decided to cut bait, and now they're kicking themselves.
Yeah, it's rough, especially when like they just don't do anything because we want to get in with someone new. And again, this is more of the exception than the norm. I was You're right. It's difficult to trade Williams away. It's difficult to trade for him. You're just gonna gotta kind of hold, I think, in my opinion. But I am on with you that he's a very exciting prospect for best ball and waivered redraft or whatever. But you know, moving on to it, someone who's also fairly polarizing for some is Jimmy Garoppolo, who said he is good to go for the starter training camp. He doesn't expect to be placed on the active PUP list. You know, Josh, like last year, Jimmy Garoppolo fever was in full swing, and this year it seems to be the exact opposite. Like he's going fairly late in best ball drafts, pretty much across platforms. What expectations should you know, drafters have for Garoppolo and the 49ers' aerial attack this season? And you know, what are your thoughts on his ADP right now for whichever best ball platform you play primarily on, and who are some other quarterbacks you're looking at in that range?
Yeah, so my outlook for Garoppolo is relatively the same as it was last year. You know, the difference being that last year, if you expect him to be like QB, you know, between QB 12 and QB 18, and it's a pretty wide range, but, you know, quarterback scoring is still pretty tight in that area. But if you expect him to finish like, you know, basically at the back end of QB 1 to halfway down QB 2, you know, last year you had to draft him between QB 8 and QB 10 in order to get him on your roster. It was an overpay. But this year it's an underpay because now he's between QB 18 and QB 22 in your drafts. So the outlook doesn't change, but the cost to acquire him has swung completely the other way. That's what you want, whether it be in dynasty or best ball. So while I haven't drafted that much Garoppolo, it's not because I don't want to draft him. It's there are other guys I'd rather draft. And so you mentioned the players that are around him. Like, I'd rather draft Tom Brady around him. I'd rather draft Lamar Jackson around him. I'd rather draft Philip Rivers around him. You know, and a couple of these quarterbacks maybe go a little bit higher on ADP, but I feel better drafting them than I do Jimmy Garoppolo at this time, even though the price is similar.
Yeah, I said this before on RotoViz Radio, and I think I'll say it again, if only because I kind of think, like, when you're looking at the contract structure, it feels almost like the 49ers really rue the fact that he got hurt last year because they cannot evaluate him because they really have to figure out if they want to pick up his player option. It's a lot of money after the next 2 years. If not, they can cut bait on him fairly cheaply for a very minimal dead cap hit. I mean, you would think that, like, his cap hit, like, it looks like a big raw value number, but for a team swimming in cap space and not having to pay Garoppolo that much, it's not that much, and I should probably pull up the exact number so the listeners know what I'm talking about, but I will probably write something about it for RotoViz at some point. I wrote about it for the 49ers' preview, for my free agency preview for them, and the one thing I came away with it before the free agency went live was I mentioned that I think this might be a year where the Niners attack the you know, try to beef up what their aerial attack looks like because they've got Kittle, but they still needed someone. And they were in talks to acquire Odell Beckham, and that did not work out. You know, I mean, it was just, I mean, we read the story, like, when it came out. It was just a stunner. It looks like the Niners just were kind of sideswiped by the Browns. So it's interesting to see them build up this receiver core. Out of curiosity, if you're not taking George Kittle early and you're not taking Dante Pettis, who are you taking late?
See, that's the thing I have an issue with the Niners is I don't like any of their guys late. Like if I haven't really drafted that much of the Niners this season because there's no certainty around their receiving options outside. And I think even Pettis is in this realm where I don't feel very certain about him. I know a lot of folks do. Obviously, his ADP speaks to that. It's in the seventh round right now. But personally, I don't know what to think of this Niners passing attack. And outside of Kittle and the running backs, I've avoided it altogether. I do like Marquise Goodwin, but again, he's a concussion issue. Deebo Samuel is an interesting prospect. He's a rookie wide receiver. Jalen Hurts is this Swiss Army knife that I have no idea what they're going to do with. So there's just – to me, there's not a lot to go on here until we see some live action in training camp and preseason. And at that point, I may make a decision to say, okay, now I can start drafting these guys. I've got the information and I feel comfortable with it. But right now, I just don't feel comfortable drafting any of these receiving options outside of Kittle.
Yeah, and I think Tittle, one of the interesting things from a roster resource management standpoint in best ball is that it really frees you up to if you're taking a tight end that high, you should try to close out that position fairly quick so you can actually, because you're choosing to be strong via the tight end, and then you got to address deficiencies elsewhere, right? So it's interesting for sure. I mean, I think I've got a little bit of Pettis. There's guys going around Pettis who I just kind of prefer. So, you know, it's not necessarily that I even consider Pettis to be this kind of great sleeper option. I don't know if Garoppolo is the guy who I want to be taking as, like, I don't know, relying full-time as, like, a QB2. Maybe if he sort of somehow falls to you, that would be completely fine, but I'm not going out of my way. That's a very flat range for me at that point, right?
Yeah, I think it's pretty flat.
Yeah, just take whoever you get. I mean, I guess at some point you'll end up with a handful, but... Yeah, it's interesting because I remember last year Pierre Garçon was getting – he went from being ninth rounder to like sixth, fifth, and that was like an absolute disaster across the board.
And again, that was – Pierre Garçon was – it was a logic tree that got you to Pierre Garçon that early because it's like, okay, well, there's nobody else there to catch the ball except for Kittle. Okay, well, if that's it, then – Who's going to get 150 targets in the offense? I don't know. Okay, well, let's draft this guy. And it's like I see the same thing for Dante Pettis this year. Now, the big difference is Dante Pettis is young. He's in his second season or third season. I can't remember which, but he's young. And Pierre Garçon's in the twilight of his career last year. So obviously there's some differences in the circumstance, but I see the same logic tree working down to Dante Pettis, and I'm not buying into it yet.
Yeah, it was a bit of a panic overpay for them to go with Garçon, just wrangling him from Washington. Maybe they should have panic overpaid for OBJ. I don't know.
I just think the Giants flat out didn't want to keep him in the NFC.
Yeah, that's – well, Giants fans should probably remember the good times. It's dark days. I mean – They've got an exciting handful of players out there. I'm not saying that I should make fun. I'm making fun of Giants fans. It's just a bit of a bummer because you never see guys of that stature traded in their prime.
No, ever. It's a new day.
Yeah, and it's exciting. I like these like big trades in like free agency where these star players go. But before we get into the RotoViz Patreon is back for a second season and it is better than ever. And patrons start at just $6 a month. We now offer exclusive access to the RotoViz Radio Slack, where you can ask questions and you can gain league-winning advice from many of the podcast and writing team. Patrons also get first dibs on listener league spots. The leagues, I believe, should be starting soon. And in the $9 tier, you get some pretty sweet RotoViz Radio merchandise at the end of the season. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today. Join an exclusive community of listeners. Access some of our premium content. Do your part in helping the network to grow and continue to produce high-quality, industry-leading programming at patreon.com/RotoVizRadio. And again, speaking of some other exclusive offers, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get a 10% off a RotoViz NFL Pass right now. It's available through the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Just get ready for the NFL season. We're pretty much, it's here. It's around the corner. Your drafts are starting soon. You should be drafting all offseason, but they're definitely starting soon. If not, you should be getting prepped up for your redraft leagues. You gain unlimited access to all of our NFL content. You gain all of our access to our tools. You get amazing value. You help support and grow the podcast network. And once again, that's at rotoviz.com/podcast. Josh, let's get into no shit, shit no. All right, first item up, you've got Cam Newton. The Charlotte Observer's Brendan Marks writes that Cam Newton is slated to be a full participant when training camp opens.
No shit for me. I think everything's trending the right way here. All the right things have been said out of Carolina. I don't think they've been lying to us. And we have to consider what full participant for Cam Newton means as a grizzled veteran now of 5 or 6 seasons. God, longer than that. I think it's 7 or 8. But a full participant for him probably still means, you know, light work and limited preseason action in the games. And that's exactly what you want if you want Cam Newton. You just still want him to finish healing up that shoulder and get his tune-up workouts in during the training camp sessions so that he's ready for week 1.
Yeah, did you see that video of Cam the other day where he ran that route like 50 yards down the field and got that bomb.
Yeah, he's a freak athlete, man.
The guy doesn't move. Like, you shouldn't be that big and moving like that, just that gracefully. I'm kind of excited, if only because we heard reports. This time last year, we heard Luck was throwing a high school football. Cam Newton's been throwing regulation size footballs pretty much all off season.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, like, guys heal differently, and obviously Andrew Luck had some issues with the repair that was done on his shoulder. You know, we saw Drew Brees tore his labrum in week 17 and was starting the very next season in week 1 for New Orleans. And he took on an aggressive rehab, something that had really never been seen before in a quarterback or really any kind of a throwing athlete, and he defied the odds. Andrew Luck's just on the other side of that equation. So he's the flip side. So Cam Newton, if he's, the median here, I think we're happy with that. And I've been drafting him with reckless abandon.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's my most owned just across all sites, if only because his price has been egregiously low. Ravens' tight end Mark Andrews could be the a featured receiving target, according to the team's website.
Yeah, we talked about San Francisco a minute ago and how I'm very apprehensive to draft any of their receiving targets outside of George Kittle. And I feel the same way about Baltimore. Like, their receiving options outside of Mark Andrews, I don't have a lot of confidence in. And granted, Mark Andrews was a low volume receiver last year, but on the volume he received, he excelled. And I feel like this is going to be a prime season for him to continue that. I went back and looked at Greg Roman and the offenses that he ran in both San Francisco and Buffalo. And a hallmark of those offenses, outside of his success with a dual threat quarterback, was his propensity to target the tight end in the passing game. So if we go back and look at the 49ers with Colin Kaepernick and Greg Roman as the OC, we have Vernon Davis and Delanie Walker at tight end. And these guys are combining for, on average, 100 to 130 targets a season. Then he moves on to Buffalo, and Buffalo, he has Charles Clay. Charles Clay is not quite the dynamic athlete that Mark Andrews is. He's still getting 80 to 90 targets a season. So if we infer anything here, which is dangerous, but based on the limited information we have, it's all we can do. If we infer that Greg Roman will carry this tight end friendly system forward in Baltimore, Mark Andrews is a dude that you have to target. And I think Hayden Hurst probably needs a little bit of a look too late in drafts.
Yeah, I think I own a Hayden Hurst on just like one deep dynasty roster, and that's about it. I mean, Mark Andrews is getting a fair amount of buzz. He's seen his ADP rise fairly consistently all offseason, and this is not going to help keep that cost down. But I agree with everything you said. Just out of curiosity, what are your expectations for wide receivers not named Willie Snead on this team?
This is a situation, I think, again, I need some training camp reps to monitor this, but I'm very excited for Miles Boykin here. I know a lot of folks have talked up Chris Moore during the offseason as kind of this deep sleeper type that you could target. The team's discussed him a bit too. Miles Boykin, to me, kind of fits the athletic profile of a receiver that would excel in an offense like this, that maybe isn't a high volume passing offense, but requires like this big athletic receiver to go get the ball when necessary. And Boykin kind of fits that mold for me. So he's the guy I'm looking at the most outside of Snead and Hollywood Brown.
Nice. Yeah, that's an interesting one. And you bring up a bunch of really interesting points, which actually I'm going to have to probably go back and reopen my thoughts on Boykin. All right. Juju Smith-Schuster believes James Washington will sneak up on people this year.
To me, that's a shit no. James Washington's like 6'4". He's not sneaking up on anybody. But all jokes aside.
Yeah, exactly.
All jokes aside, it's possible James Washington can sneak up on folks. He didn't get any work last year, so there's not a lot of tape on him. And the issue for him is going to be, if he blows up in the preseason, he's not sneaking up on anybody. So I'm dubious about him sneaking up on folks this year. I'm much more bullish on Dante Moncrief in this offense. He's a young guy still. Dante Moncrief's 25. He's been in the league for, I think, 4 or 5 seasons already. So, I like these young players that have a lot of work underneath their belt. Kenny Stills is a similar type player that, granted, Moncrief's on his third team, but he's landing in the perfect offense for him. And we've already heard Ben Roethlisberger talk him up from OTAs this offseason as a player that's really worked well with him and has come in and kind of picked up the system. So, you know, Washington may sneak up on people, but I think Moncrief is the guy to own.
Yeah, I'm with you. Don't know why their ADPs are kind of flipped. I think it might just be at this point. I believe it might be flipped on draft, but in BB10s, I don't think they are. And I'm going to have to actually check some of Mike Beers' great tools just to see where the ADPs currently are. I took a bit of a break from drafting best ball because I felt I needed to take a little bit of break and step away from watching, dealing with the current ADP. And then I changed it up. Like you mentioned, I've been playing some of that draft and mini tournament instead. So that's exciting. I'm with you on Moncrief. I think it's interesting because this is we saw Moncrief be fairly good with Locke in a very particular role, and now we get to see him go to another good quarterback after his little sojourn to Jacksonville. So I'm excited. I'm with you on Moncrief. I think as a guy you kind of want here, if only because he should. Him and James Washington should probably skip work. That said, what are your thoughts on Juju this year?
I don't see any reason why Juju couldn't see 180 targets this year. They lost so much passing volume out of the offense between Antonio Brown and then God, who else did they lose? Well, they lost Le'Veon Bell, but Le'Veon Bell was lost last season too. But they've lost like 200 some odd targets in their offense, I believe, and somebody has to take him up. And Juju already had well over 100 targets, so if he just gets a little portion of that, you know, you're looking at 180 to 200 targets potentially. It's how can you pass that up? I mean, I think a lot of folks are looking at him as their potential wide receiver one, and you know, why not?
Yeah, I think that there's a very good case for Juju as not just a dino wide receiver one, but also like he should be in that redraft op tier. This is a fun one. Frank Gore is not sure when he will retire.
No shit. Nobody's sure when he will retire. Frank Gore is a modern marvel, and we should all appreciate him while we can.
Yeah, the guy is eternal. Maybe our grandkids will be watching Frank Gore. She'll go for it. 700 yards and 6 touchdowns.
We should all be so lucky.
Delanie Walker does not know if he will open the camp on the active pup list.
Yeah, to me, this is a no shit. He did bust his ankle up pretty good, and it was relatively late last season, at the middle of the season, I think, maybe middle late.
No, I think it was the first game, actually, that horror show in Miami.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right about that. And that I had game, to. Oh, my God.
That game felt like it was like 5 weeks long because it started and stopped and started and stopped. It was a disaster. They lost Mariota and they lost Delanie. It was just from the start, it was a cursed start to the season.
Now I remember why I had a bad memory on this. It's because I had him on so many best ball rosters as my tight end one that I purged it from my memory.
Yeah, that shows you just how invested I was in like the Titans' offense that I remember the exact moment. Like I couldn't fathom why the game was not moving from like why the game clock was frozen in the first quarter when we were like headed to like the close of the afternoon games, and I was like, what happened here? It was just an abject disaster from like start to finish. But yeah, so what are your thoughts here on Delanie? Not on Delanie, but what are your thoughts here on, is it going to be like AJ Brown? You're going to see Corey Davis? What happens?
I'm all aboard with Corey Davis. I don't see any reason why they won't really push him as the wide receiver one as they've done the past couple seasons. And I think he's another player that's ripe for 160 targets again as a clear wide receiver one in the offense. And obviously they did sign Adam Humphries to a relatively healthy contract. And while I think he's going to get some work, I think he's probably more like a run game proxy than anything else. And AJ Brown, I like AJ Brown as a receiver, but we just don't see too many rookie receivers break in when they're tied to a what we think is going to be a run heavy offense. So he's probably the best candidate to break out this year, but there's a lot of pieces moving around him that could kneecap that in a hurry.
Yeah, I've been taking a bit of like AJ Brown. He just goes so late.
You can get him in the last round.
Yeah, you could do worse as with your wide receiver 8 selection.
Absolutely.
You could just do way worse, and even if he like doesn't do well for you at the start, like you could hope for a hot finish almost. Like his upside isn't baked into where he currently is. Is I guess is the phrase that I'm looking for.
I agree with that 100%.
John Ross is hoping to reinvent himself this season.
Oh, no shit. He needs to do something because otherwise he's going to be out of the league. And I don't know what that something is. You know, I think this is a player that was just with the wrong organization from the get-go. And the only thing, in my opinion, that's going to help him reinvent himself is a new team. And to me, John Ross is I think he's a potential trade target at the trade deadline for teams this year. If they're looking for a little bit of like speedster help, they need somebody that can step in and clear out the deep end of the field. I think this may be a player that somebody looks at to try to rehabilitate on the cheap.
Yeah, what's interesting is I kind of hope what he's inferring here is that he's hoping to play a little bit of cornerback. Because he played a little bit of that for Washington. He started as a wide receiver, switched to cornerback, came back, and that Bengals' defense is kind of poor. They might need the help.
That's an interesting idea.
Well, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, he came on fairly strong towards the end of the season, but he didn't do much until both AJ Green and Tyler Boyd were gone, and I don't know if that's like a function of how uncreative last year's coaching staff was. But you and I have kind of talked a little bit about this, and we're both in agreement that the Bengals are ostensibly the worst run franchise in the league, just like bar none.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt, they are the bottom tier team in the league.
Yeah, like it's not close. Just how they squander some all-star talent. But here we are. Sony Michel said that he is aiming for a training camp return.
Oh, shit no for me. His price is way too high, and he carries way too much risk, in my opinion. It's, you know, this is running backs in this range are very difficult to earn your return back on what you've had to pay for them. So, if, you know, you're drafting a guy in the 5th round, and he has a bulky knee. At any point, he could be usurped by the 3rd-round talent that New England just drafted. In addition to the other talents that they already have on the roster at running back position, things could change in a hurry for Sony Michel, where he's persona non grata, where they, you know, maybe they use him as a bit of a change of pace back when they need to run the ball. But, you know, this offense could come out this season and maybe they're not a grinder offense anymore. Maybe they are this high-flying, 5-wide offense that they were back in 2007 and 2008. We just don't know. So the adage is don't draft the highest price Patriots running back. And I think you just follow through with that here.
Yeah, luckily his price has actually kind of started to spiral downwards a little bit. I think he's going much later than he was earlier. But even then, it's still kind of early. At the same time, Damian Harris has just sort of seen his price kind of spike. I don't know if we're getting close to the inflection point, but it feels like we're getting close to some kind of like shark being jumped with Damian Harris. I don't know how good you would feel. I guess if you get Sony Michel, if you pass him over, I guess not pass him over, but let's just say hypothetically you draft him in like the late 6th and someone else, I don't know, man, maybe way overreaches for a Damian Harris in like the 8th through like the 8.5. It almost would kind of be like, okay, so which one of these is right? It's a bit of a hard bet. What are your thoughts on Rex Burkhead just sort of being a viable fantasy player this year?
The optimist in me says go for it in the 18th round, and the realist in me says go for it in the 18th round, but not every time. sprinkle yeah. it in. Don't put the hammer down. I think Rex Burkhead will have games where he scores two touchdowns and may end up being your running back one on the week. But I think there may be, you know, 8 to 14 weeks where he's not putting up a usable score too. So it's his range of outcomes is very broad. And when you draft him in the 18th round, that's exactly what you're paying for, is a broad range of outcomes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. I don't know. I just think his price is far too low, but it might just be completely correct in that he might just be a healthy scratch for most of the year. Second-year wide receiver DJ Moore said that he's looking to make the same jump teammate Christian McCaffrey took last season.
Oh, man, this is a no shit for me. Of course he is. He wants to be a 100-reception player, and nobody can blame him.
Yeah, I'm genuinely kind of excited. I mean, if you go back to, like, his game logs, it wasn't too exciting. But, again, like, he sort of flashed this, like, upside. And I think this what's interesting is with Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore, and I know there's been, like, all these different discussions who is a real wide receiver one. Well, for starters, we should actually admit that I personally have the belief that that's a bit of a bad talking point. I mean, this team clearly wants to change the style of offense that they play with Cam. They've got three guys now who are ostensibly who embody positionless football almost, right? Like, you got Moore, you got McCaffrey, and you got Curtis Samuel, to where Cam's able to get the ball out quicker, which helps him avoid taking hits, versus the Kelvin Benjamin, Devin Funchess, Greg Olsen trio they were trotting out, where it takes, you know, they got to get separation and go down the field, and, you know, Cam takes these harder hits in the backfield, and you're just, like, holding the ball a little bit. So it's interesting to them. It's me projecting a thought about Cam's health onto this offense. But at the same time, there's something very interesting in this team going from traditional NFL, you know, pass offense to this ability to hit any of these guys, with the ability to just kick it into high gear when they find, you know, daylight and just can take it, you know, 70 yards to the house. And God help you if you're trying to stop them.
Yeah, massive yak is a quarterback's best friend.
Yeah, and he's got three guys now who can do it. What are your thoughts on Curtis Samuel versus DJ Moore in their ADPs?
I tend to lead toward the cheaper player that I think is going to produce value against his ADP. So for me, Samuel's the play. I do have some DJ Moore. I'm really excited about him. I thought he was an excellent prospect coming out of Maryland, and I still think he's trending up. And I think Curtis Samuel can trend up too. Like, there's room in this offense for Christian McCaffrey and two really good receivers in addition to the tight end. Like, they're still going to have a very tight distribution of targets on the offense between, you know, it's McCaffrey, Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Greg Olsen / Ian Thomas. So if that's the case, I think you have to be very excited about Curtis Samuel, especially at his 9th, 10th round ADP.
Titans coach Mike Vrabel reiterated Ryan Tannehill's job is as the backup.
No shit. I don't see any reason why this guy gets on the field unless there's an injury. I mean, they are committed to Mariota. I think this is, I mean, obviously this is an evaluation year for Mariota, being his 5th year, his option year. And the only thing we will find out next offseason is if Tennessee decides to franchise tag him or actually sign him to a long-term contract based on his play.
Jack Doyle said that he is not rushing his recovery.
Oh, that's a no shit for me too. Please, Jack, get healthy, get good for week 1. I'm going to need you bad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's a really good value here. I mean, Ebron's price has started to come down a lot to where he's becoming a little bit more interesting and intriguing as a palatable option. But yeah, I'm with you on Jack.
All right. So I'm going to bounce this back to you. Where is Ebron palatable?
That's genuinely more draft dependent, and like where I am at tight end, it's just a really weird mid range at tight end. That's I don't know. We were talking about this with Pat Fitzmaurice a few weeks ago, and I guess you kind of still want him in that tight end 10 to 12 range just because it's kind of gross. Would you take Ebron after Vance or before Vance?
No, I'm taking Vance ahead of Ebron. To me, Eric Ebron's not a top 15 tight end.
Yeah, I actually have Ebron ranked a handful above Vance, but I think I'm actually going to be dropping him down. I got to actually probably drop him down below quite a few prospects over here. who are you taking over Vance? I mean, is it going to be Herndon? Is it going to be Mark Andrews? So I guess how far does Ebron need to slide?
To me, Ebron would definitely need to slide behind Herndon and Mark Andrews. I would put him behind Jack Doyle. I like Jack Doyle more than Eric Ebron.
Okay, that's interesting. All right.
See, like, here's the thing about Eric Ebron is Indianapolis signed a better version of Eric Ebron in Devin Funchess this offseason.
Right.
So, you know, Eric Ebron was the beneficiary of an insane, insane touchdown rate last season, and that stuff always regresses. So to draft him alongside a player like Vance McDonald or Jared Cook, players that are ramping up in volume, we see Eric Ebron likely ramping down in volume. Oh, and his TD rate is also going to crash to the floor. It's just, how do you justify drafting him as tight end 7 or 8? You can't do it, to be honest. You can't do it.
Yeah, good point. I might have to actually look into changing where I've got Ebron here. I was sort of a little bit optimistic in that I might want to be aggressive, but yeah, just after hearing your thoughts on the matter, I got to change it up. Here's a fun guy. Jets is running back D'Angelo Henderson was stealing reps from Elijah McGuire in OTAs.
Shit, no for me. I mean, these guys paid a gajillion dollars for Le'Veon Bell to come run the ball. It doesn't matter what's going on behind Le'Veon Bell, in my opinion. And they can talk about it in the news all they want. I'm not going to pay any attention to it.
Nine News is Mike Kliss believes there is a great chance of Courtland Sutton becoming the number one receiver.
No shit, I guess. You know, they drafted Courtland Sutton higher than they drafted Deshaun Hamilton last year. The problem with Mike Kliss is Mike Kliss is a liar, and he's a mouthpiece of the organization and not necessarily an accurate one. Again, he spouted plenty of lies about Paxton Lynch and also, I think, Chad Kelly, when Chad Kelly was still with the team, among some other stuff. So Mike Kliss, to me, I don't pay attention to anything he puts out there because he does not tell the truth. So I'm still siding with Deshaun Hamilton here based on Deshaun Hamilton's cost relative to Courtland Sutton. And I think Deshaun probably has a better profile to become the number one receiver. Now, that's not saying Sutton can't. These guys may end up becoming 1A and 1B until Emmanuel Sanders eventually gets healthy late in the season. But that said, cost accounted for, you have to go with Deshaun Hamilton.
Hi, RotoViz fans. Allow me a brief second to tell you about our good friends over at the FFPC, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. It's been 10 years since the FFPC filled their first Dynasty League, and they've now grown to be the world's largest Dynasty League commissioner with leagues as high as $5,000. To enter, FFPC leagues are active and competitive, and not a single league has ever folded. Brand new startup Dynasty Leagues are forming right now, starting at $77 and up in standard Superflex and Best Ball formats. And for those of you ready for your greatest challenge, take a look at this year's FFPC main event. What is the main event exactly? It is the world's biggest event in season-long fantasy football, and this year is coming at you with $500,000 grand prize and over $3.1 million in total prizes. Come to Las Vegas for a three-day weekend of live drafts and festivities at the Planet Hollywood Resort Casino, or draft online from the comfort of your home. Find out more about the main event deadline coming up in just a few days on Monday, July the 22nd. But go to MyFFPC and register now. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. All right, Josh, we're headed into the home stretch here. The Philly Voice's Jimmy Kemsky believes Jordan Howard will get the lion's share of Eagles' short yardage work. Josh, this isn't the first time we've heard the Eagles' reporters bang the drum for Jordan Howard, sorry, as their power back this offseason. What kind of split do you think Howard and Miles Sanders will see in the year versus later in the year? And is there any fantasy viable role at all for guys like Corey Clement, Josh Adams, or Wendell Smallwood?
I think I'm going to answer the second part first. I think Corey Clement has some usefulness in the offense because he's a good receiving back. And the other receiving back we don't talk about here is Darren Sproles, who has been rumored to be coming back this season. He wants to play, and Philly has expressed interest in him coming back to the team. So, you know, this could be another fly in the ointment for Miles Sanders or Jordan Howard, whoever you side with. What I thought was interesting is I saw this blurb on RotoWorld about Jordan Howard, and directly above it is another blurb about Miles Sanders from Jimmy Kemsky as well. And it says that he believes Miles Sanders needs to improve in pass protection. So, all right, so I have two stories. Miles Sanders needs to improve in pass protection. Jordan Howard could get the lion's share of the goal line work. So what I see here is two stories aimed at provoking Miles Sanders to be better, to get in the film room, to get on the field, to get healthy. And because I sincerely believe they want Miles Sanders to be the guy. They've spent the draft capital on him. They obviously think that he profiles as, I believe, an every down back. And these stories are coming out that kind of hint at what Miles Sanders needs to do to be a bell cow back in Philadelphia. So to me, it's not about Jordan Howard. It's about them wanting to get Miles Sanders a push.
Man, I kind of hope that you're right, if only because I'm genuinely very excited for Miles Sanders. I don't have a lot of him, but I'm hoping that we keep hearing enough of these negative reports that his ADP continues to go down, because I am buying the dip.
Yeah, I'm highly, highly leveraged on Miles Sanders right now.
Yeah, it's I think it's one of those like process. I don't know if it's process over results as much as optimism over results. But like this is something that I think we can talk a little bit about. This is something that I'll whiff on like 100 times again, if only because I will always chase these the archetype of a guy like as a primary guy who should see usage in neutral and negative script on a very good offense.
Yeah, and that's really what we're looking for with running back, is we want running backs attached to good offenses, score lots of touchdowns. And whether it's Jordan Howard or Miles Sanders or Corey Clement or Wendell Smallwood or whoever, it's like you want one of these guys because they're going to get opportunities to get in the end zone. And, you know, if you have to overdraft that a little bit for the optimism for the attachment to the good offense, then that's just the going cost of being attached to a good offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's also kind of difficult to know, quote unquote, what the good offenses are, but we know the Eagles are a good offense, if only because we've seen them be fairly elite year over year over year. And you want to lean into the ambiguous nature of the RBBC, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those are the fires that you want to run into. I mean, it's common in investment talk that, you know, you run to where people are running away. If people run away from this situation because it's not clear, then I think this is the right situation to run into. We talked earlier about receiving situations that were unclear in San Francisco and Baltimore. And while you don't necessarily just want to run in there with sights on getting the right guy, it's going to depend on the cost. But in any of these situations where there's murkiness, it's worthwhile to make an investment in certain parts of it, given the cost and the opportunity available.
Speaking with NFL Network's Omar Ruiz on Tuesday, Todd Gurley said his knee is quote-unquote good. Josh, one man's arthritic knee is one offseason's massive storyline. What are your expectations for Gurley this season? Do you think this knee story has played itself out? Is it too overplayed? You know, is a level of concern here appropriate? And where are you considering Gurley, Henderson, and Malcolm Brown in drafts, if you're considering any of these guys at all?
So while I have some concern about Gurley's long-term viability, I think for this season, in a best ball draft, I haven't been taking him because I think his cost is too high, relative to his risk. In season-long drafts, I may be more prone to take him because then I can replace him later. It's easier to replace him later. And I think Gurley's outlooks are fine. Like if we think that Gurley is going to get, 15 to 20 touches a game, dude, that's awesome. Like how many running backs can you get in the late second, third round that are going to get that volume in a productive offense like the Rams have? They're not available. They're just not available. So I think Gurley, while a little bit expensive for my taste personally, I don't have too much problem with his cost where people are taking him. I see the reason why. Personally, though, I'm taking a lot of Daryl Henderson. I think Daryl Henderson operates outside of the realm of Gurley and Malcolm Brown. Like Daryl Henderson brings a different skill set to the team than either of these other two running backs have. He has his own role designated already, and that role can grow. Like he's the perfect zero RB candidate because he has a role already as a pass catching running back that will get some running work, and it can grow into, you know, three down work potentially. That's the ideal zero RB candidate. So I have a lot of Daryl Henderson. I overdraft Daryl Henderson because I believe in the opportunity that he has ahead of him, even with Gurley in the lineup. And then that said, on the other side of that, Malcolm Brown, I can still get Malcolm Brown in the 16th or 17th round. I like that price for him. It's a fair price for the opportunity of him stepping into a Gurley role potentially. So, you know, I think all these backs are relatively fairly priced. Gurley's a little bit expensive for my taste. The other two backs are, you know, Henderson's starting to creep up there to where he's maybe not so much anymore. But I'm going to put it to you this way. Would you rather draft Daryl Henderson or would you rather draft Tariq Cohen?
Yeah, give me Henderson, I think, here, if only because I genuinely don't know what to make of Tariq Cohen's like role. He got kind of squeezed down the stretch at the end there, and he's kind of, it feels a little bit like he's overvalued, and it feels like you're paying a little bit too much for pass production for a guy who got most of his primarily through the receiving game, and then towards the end of the year didn't have any work in the receiving game.
Yeah, see, the issue with Tariq Cohen is the weekly floor is low. You want him to be James White, but he's not James White because he doesn't play in New England offense. He plays in the Chicago offense. If they're ahead on the scoreboard, why do they need Tariq Cohen in the game? They can hand the ball off to Montgomery and Mike Davis and salt away a lead. So it's a weekly proposition with Tariq Cohen. That's why I don't understand why you would pay a fifth or sixth round pick for him when you could get Daryl Henderson for just a slightly less cost.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening here. I mean, like Cohen's like ADP is still it was theoretically high last year, but he kind of paid it off. And this year it's crept a little higher, but it's pushed him a little bit into that overvalued. Again, like I guess if there's one guy you're chasing in that range, it's probably James White, if only because he's the most expensive New England running back. At the same time, it's very, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to expect Tariq Cohen to replicate year over year over year over year this kind of like production. Again, I wouldn't fault anyone for going heavy on Tariq Cohen if they really want that kind of player and they're okay with it at ADP. It's just a matter of how okay can you like be with it. If only, you know, I mean, if we expect Allen Robinson to do well and we expect, you know, Miller to play a little bit better and you know, if you think David Montgomery's stealing some work and maybe they brought Mike Davis in as well, like it's hard to see. And I know Cohen's got that game breaker skill, but it's not like, you know, Taylor Gabriel's not there who has an equivalent-ish game breaker skill. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I just remember them not particularly using Cohen much down the stretch, and I was convinced it was because they wanted to save him a little bit for the playoffs, not open him to injury risk, and then they didn't use him at all in that playoffs game.
And that's potentially true. And I mean, there are a lot of flies in the ointment in Chicago for Tariq Cohen. I mean, we didn't even mention the two tight ends. They have Trey Burton and Adam Shaheen, both very good athletic tight ends that could get work this year. And we also didn't talk about the guy they signed in the offseason, Cordarrelle Patterson, who can do everything that Tariq Cohen can do from a receiving back perspective, and he can chip in some carries from time to time when they're not using him in the return game, which is where they also used Tariq Cohen sometimes last year. So there's just a lot of moving parts around Tariq Cohen that makes you wonder why you would draft him at his ceiling cost when you could get other players that have more opportunity and less mouths to feed around them.
Oh, man. Yeah, I completely forgot. And Ian Hartey's made that note about, like, Cordarrelle Patterson being the best running back in the Bears. Yeah, I've totally forgot. And they're paying him quite a bit. That is something that I legitimately forgot occurred. Wow, you really, I'm shook, I guess.
Take a minute to recover, man.
Yeah, I actually drafted Cordarrelle Patterson on a deep dynasty squad just as a wide receiver flyer, and I totally forgot that he was on the Bears. I drafted him, and then I forgot he was on the Bears, and I remember I drafted him because his contract was, like, ludicrous for this.
Yeah, it's I think that's a smart move. Like, he's not going to see a ton of volume, but I think he's going to see volume. He's going to pop in a few games.
I just need one. I mean, I drafted him way, like, I think outside of the top 200 picks. Like, I just need one game.
Yeah, if you get 1 or 2 weeks out of him, that's it. That's all you need.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Especially at the wide receiver slot. That would be tremendous. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think – that's actually an interesting way to look at it. And I'm with you on Henderson, I think. It's just a matter of – we've never really seen the Rams kind of have this kind of archetype. It's going to be interesting to see what the Rams really look like this year. I mean, so I'm with you. I mean, it's a bit of a bummer because I hate to really harp on this entire girly knee stuff, but it's been one of those things where it feels like I don't know, but whatever the answer is, I feel like we're going to be wrong. We can talk about this segment in November, and I feel like we're going to be wrong. I think if there's one player whose usage and game logs I wish I could peek the future to see, it would be Gurley's. I would like to see Gurley's season from weeks 1 through 12, I think.
Well, yeah, Gurley's the skeleton key. The skeleton key. If you know what his work is ahead of time, you can divine what the other two guys are going to be getting.
Yeah, it's dependent on draft costs, because it's not like we're getting a discount here on Gurley based on any injuries. If you're still drafting Gurley, you're sucking up and taking him as a top 12 running back, where the margins for differences only come down, as you mentioned, on the offenses. You're not gonna. There were a handful of drafts that were done earlier where Gurley fell to the late second, early third, but I think those instances are far and few between, in my opinion.
Yeah, and those are the situations you have to be on the lookout for. When he uncharacteristically falls beyond ADP, then you have to be ready to jump on it. But otherwise, I just think you go somewhere else.
I think the latest I've gotten him was in the 306 or something in draft. And again, that's not the kind – it sounds like a massive discount, but it's not, because in 2016, when Gurley had no issues, that's where he was kind of – he was going in that late second, early third area anyway. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, to be honest. It's different. I mean, early in the offseason when he was – when everybody thought he's really hurt, it was fresh. I mean, that was the time to get him. And now that, you know, folks have kind of come to their senses a little bit, and they kind of reasoned out that Gurley's going to get a decent amount of work still, and it's kind of the nightmare scenario that he doesn't play at all this season, then, you know, you see the ADP start to creep up from there, and it makes some sense to have some exposure to him as long as you're in the right draft slot in your best ball leagues.
And that will do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. A special thanks once again to our guest, Josh ADHD. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Josh ADHD. And please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our Patreon. For Blair Andrews and Hassan Rahim, thanks so much for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Say Metro by T-Mobile, got the best deal in wireless, and it's all for you, all for me. Just switch quickly, cause Metro has 2 lines for $80 and 2 Samsung Galaxy J7 Star phones for free. Plus Amazon Prime included, that's the way wireless should be, only at Metro.
Plus sales tax and activation fee, $50 plus rate plan required. Not valid for numbers currently on T-Mobile network or on Metro in past 90 days. Offer subject to change. Offer valid for new Amazon Prime members. Amazon Prime has a $12.99 per month value. Restrictions apply. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Right now at T-Mobile, get an awesome iPhone XR on us when you bring your family over and trade in your old device. Because whether you have mom, dad, or a friend on your mind, it's a gift so bold and brilliant, you'll want to keep it for yourself. Most importantly, it's on us in 6 vibrant colors. Plus, with unlimited everything from T-Mobile, the awesome iPhone XR will have everyone snapping, streaming, and sharing to their heart's content all year long. But don't wait. It's only for a limited time. So visit a store or call 1-800-T-Mobile and get iPhone XR on us.
Congested, customers using more than 50 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds due to prioritization. Video at 480p via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers plus tax. Qualifying trade-in, port-in, service, and finance agreement required. Contact us before canceling or credit stop and remaining balance due. 64 gigs, zero down, plus $31.25 per month for 24 months. Pre-credit price, $749.99, 0% APR. One offer per account.